good morning, everyone, or good afternoon, or good evening, you know, all that good stuff. You know, doing this show, and this is going to be another night of anniversaries. The reason we're doing this show on this night, which normally is open hailing, is because it happens to be, the 40th anniversary of the Viking mission to Mars. And Viking, well, there's a huge story. We're going to spend the next 2 hours talking about Viking and the backstories and all that. It's another anniversary because NASA, in their infinite wisdom, decided to land the Viking spacecraft on Mars on the anniversary, interesting, the anniversary of Apollo 11, which also landed on this date. Now, this is July 20th, so it's the 40th anniversary of Viking. It's the 47th anniversary of the Apollo 11 landing on the moon. And, as luck would have it, your faithful correspondent happened to be in both places as those events were going on. I mean, I think tonight we're going to kind of, you know, move into reminiscences and history and perspectives and all that, because the other thing that happened tonight, well, technically it happened last night, but, you know, we're still awake and it's still night and it's dark outside. Reminds me of that great line from George Carlin. You know, weather, what the weather's going to be. Well, darkness followed by light. So hoping that darkness is followed by light, tonight Donald Trump became the official nominee of the Republican Party for President of the United States. Hang on to your seatbelts. Fasten them tightly. Because in the next few days, we're going to examine the impact of Donald Trump's ascendancy to possibly the presidency. I mean, did anybody watch the conventions? I mean, they're all over everywhere, so you can watch them on anything, smartphones, tablets, computers, TVs, you know, your glasses, the VR stuff. We're heading into unexplained and unexplored territory in so many dimensions. So tonight what I've done is I've assembled our traditional panel. And what we're going to do is we're going to contrast the then and now. We have made such stunning progress in the first intimations coming out of Viking 40 years ago tonight that, in fact, all is not as we have been told with the American space program, which by metonymy also impacts the European space program, the Japanese space program, the Chinese space program, the Indian space program, the Russian space program. Should I go on? So we're going to kind of look far and wide. If you go to theothersideofmidnight.com, if you look at Radio with Pictures, click on that. That takes you to tonight's guest page. There's a couple items, news items in my section. Number one, of course, is the 40th anniversary of Viking. Number two is a story which has kind of been making it around the web. Jean-Claude Juncker, who is the head of the EU. EU, anybody? European Union? Brexit? Does that ring a bell? Gave a speech which was videotaped, and there are claims now circulating from certain, shall we say, less than auspicious sources, that he, in this speech, actually made a slip in reference to aliens. The idea that aliens, leaders from afar, from other planets. I mean, the whole thing is so marvelous. I'm going to talk to Will, because Will is kind of in charge of monitoring the BS factor in terms of ET / alien / UFO / breakaway civilization claims. So we will get to that. We're going to have an extraordinary 2 hours. We're going to be taking a break here for a couple of minutes. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and when we return, we're going to take you back in time and forward into a future that could be unimaginable. And I'm not referring to the election of Donald Trump. We shall return. Wow. Neat job. Okay, we are back on the other side of midnight. You know, to me, this is going to be a stunning walk down memory lane, because 40 years ago tonight, I was at JPL. I was sitting with a whole bunch of remarkable people, including Gene Roddenberry, who was on my right. We were kind of in the front row in the Von Karman Auditorium. There were absolutely jam-packed, you know, like 1,000 newsmen. There were half of them maybe Japanese. I'm just kind of kidding. But the Japanese used to send camera crews all over the world, particularly to the NASA events, in rather disproportionate numbers to the size of the country and the population and all that. I mean, the Japanese then and now are overwhelmingly interested, maybe even obsessed, with space. So they were there, and the American networks, and the we only had three back then. 40 years. I mean, I can remember, I can close my eyes, I can see the NASA public affairs officials trying to keep Robert Heinlein out of the auditorium, which, of course, caused a major ruckus, as you might imagine. Heads rolled. Well, they didn't roll, but there were stern talkings, too, and finally Robert and Virginia, his wife, got properly seated. And NASA used to throw these parties. We used to talk about it as kind of interplanetary Woodstocks, because every few years we would have an encounter, you know, a flyby or a landing, and a whole bunch of us who covered the missions or who were advisors to networks or freelancers. Remember, this is before blogs. This is when you actually wrote in magazines. Boy, I must sound so archaic. All this stuff that was pre-digital, pre-electrons, except for, you know, TV, of course. And that particular night, it was absolutely astonishing, because the way the spacecraft was designed, it was a huge spacecraft, a $1 billion mission, which back then, you know, was kind of like Everett Dirksen once said, you know, a few billion here and there, and quickly it adds up to real money. So the $1 billion Viking mission, which was billed as the first official search for life on Mars, landed literally 40 years ago. Tonight, now, 40 years ago, four decades. And the landing, of course, was all automatic, all autonomous, under computer control, because depending upon where Earth is and Mars is in relation to the Earth in the solar system, there's a big gap, millions of miles, and at the speed of light, it takes light, radio waves, telemetry transmissions, many, many minutes to come back from Mars to Earth and be received by the antennas of the DSN, the Deep Space Network, which are these huge dishes located approximately 120 degrees around the Earth on major continents. There's one in South Africa, there's one in Spain, there's one in Australia, there's one in the Mojave Desert. When I say one, I mean one station. They have many, many antennas, but this is part of NASA's worldwide tracking network, the Deep Space Network, designed to basically receive very, 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 very faint signals all the way from spacecraft at the edge of the solar system. I mean, Viking only was a presager of things like New Horizons. Now we're at the edge, literally, the boundary of the known and the unknown solar system. But back then, it was Mars, it was canals, it was, you know, Orson Welles, it was the invasion, it was 1938, it was, what in the world are we going to see when the Viking spacecraft landed and the first pictures came back? Well, if you know anything about the design of the spacecraft, the cameras that were on it, there were two cameras on the lander. The cameras were not what we call framing cameras, meaning click, you know, you with your cell phone, you take a picture. By the way, we're in 140 countries. Can I make a plea to everyone with smartphones? If you're going to take video and submit video to YouTube or video on your smartphone to the networks or whatever, please turn your camera horizontal. I am so tired of seeing these little tiny windows of stuff going on with out-of-focus, faded double shots on both sides, which is what the networks now do, so you don't have black on both sides. Turn the camera 90 degrees, hold it horizontal. It's a rectangle. Make the rectangle horizontal with the ground, and that will give you a widescreen HD view, which will fit perfectly on TV screens or computer screens or whatever. So please, folks, think like photographers. Take the right kind of pictures, because I'm really tired at looking at, you know, replications of video animation of the monolith on the moon from 2001. Okay, back to Viking. So the Viking cameras were what were called slit scan cameras. They basically look like two, flower canisters, aluminum flower canisters sitting on top of the Viking lander. And they had a big black slit running up and down one side. And the canister would slowly rotate, left and right, horizontal. And inside, in the guts of the camera, a set of diodes and mirrors and all that were scanning up and down as the camera was, a slit was panning left or right. This created a mechanical scanning system that allowed the camera to build up line by line the image that it was viewing, a panorama looking out on Mars from the top deck of the newly landed spacecraft. So there we all are, 1,000 of us in this packed auditorium, very hot, very oppressive, air conditioning, in July in California. And lo and behold, we see this view wiping slowly from left to right on the black and white monitors all around JPL, all around the auditorium. And at the end of the first line of images that came in that created the whole black and white panorama, we saw the landing pad of the spacecraft. We saw little rocks. There had been a huge controversy in and outside NASA as to what the first picture should be. And, of course, all of us space aficionados, including people like Carl Sagan, who was on the team and all that, who had some clout, he really pressed for taking a picture of the horizon so you could see what Mars looked like. But the engineers overruled the science and the public and the interest and the obsession with Mars, because the first image came back of the footprint, of the footpad, of the landing legs, which sounds really, really dumb. But the theory was, the logic was, that if the spacecraft disappears and we didn't have a picture of how it had landed, the assumption might be that it, a la Tommy Gold, had sunk into deep, deep dust, never to be seen again. So they wanted a picture of the ground and the footpad to basically see how firm the surface of Mars would be for landing future spacecraft in case something happened to this one. So that was their priority, the first picture. So the picture is slowly wiping across the screen. And we're looking and we're looking and everybody's like, hushed tones, and we're watching this, and finally the whole picture is there. It's projected from the IDA4 in the back of the auditorium onto a big screen in the front of the auditorium. And at that moment, Gene Roddenberry to my right leaps up, stands up, remember we're in the front row, leaps up, turns around, looks at the entire auditorium of assembled news people and celebrities and special guests and VIPs and political hacks and people from NASA headquarters, and he yells, "Cut! Print!" And that was how my Viking experience began. My guest this morning to share some of this reminiscence and what it has led to, the astonishing developments that have now confirmed there, in fact, has been an ancient civilization on Mars, probably several, but at least one, are Keith Laney, who is a space image processing and anomaly specialist from Charlotte, North Carolina. Keith is a husband, a father, a grandfather, an artist, a copper master, an amateur space scientist, an avid promoter, and a supporter of space exploration. And, of course, he does exquisite imaging work. And, unfortunately, we're having a bit of a technical issue with him, so he will be joining us shortly. My next guest is Andrew Curry. Now, I want to say a special word about Andrew. Last week, I was under the weather, and I kind of reached out in desperation, and I said, "Andrew, can you take the helm?" And Andrew freaked out. And then when he went on the air for 2 hours, I listened to this guy who had never done this before act as if he had been doing it for 1,000 years. He was smooth, he was calm, he was seamless, he brought up interesting points, he related Georgia to the other panelists. I mean, he was frankly, I was in awe. I said, "My God, maybe I can retire." So tonight I'm thinking of putting Andrew in charge. No, I'm just kidding, Andrew. don't have a conniption fit. Andrew is, he's an artist. He began his artistic career as a community public artist working with neighborhood groups to create murals in schools and community centers. And as a graphic designer and illustrator, he served as small to large Canadian companies And for the past decade, he's worked as a storyboard artist and concept illustrator in film and television and in commercial TV advertising. Andrew has a Bachelor of Arts degree from the University of British Columbia, a diploma in graphic design and illustration, and a master's in art therapy. And remember, Andrew came to this program a year ago, almost a year ago, to talk about the art of Alan Bean, who was a member of the second crew to land on the moon several months after Apollo 11 on Apollo 12 in November of 1969. But we won't talk much about that tonight because we have too many other anniversaries to think about. My third panelist is Will Farrer. Will grew up in Maryland, where he started his career in technology at a very young age. He now works for a major healthcare company that still does not want to be identified with the other side of midnight, so we won't press him too much on that. What Will brings to the table is a keen eye and an ability to operate in situations like Andrew, with which he has not been previously familiar. Remember when he did a kind of a tour over at the National Academy of Sciences and gave us all that incredibly interesting inside fly-on-the-wall perspective? So Andrew is with us, and we're going to talk about imaging and public outreach and all that in the decades since Viking. Finally, but not least, Bob Harrison, who is joining us all the way from England, merry old England, which is England again because it's now no longer part of the EU, and they're kind of feeling their oats. And so, let's see, what else should I say about Bob? He's financially independent, which he, of course, hasn't told the rest of the team how you do that, so we all can kind of just become childs of the space age. He's been fascinated, obviously, as long as I have and everybody else on the panel, with space. And in June 2000, Bob began the Sidonia Quest website. And all the guys' websites are linked up next to their names, so you can go there and look at those. Sidonia Quest is particularly interesting because he has a vast range of analytical imagery and graphics, and you know, there's a couple of equations or two if you kind of look hard. And so that rounds out our group this morning. Everyone is with us except Keith. So as my grandmother used to say, if you will talk among yourselves, well, no, I'm not going to do that either. Gentlemen, welcome to the other side of midnight. While I work on getting Keith connected, who wants to take the lead here in terms of where we are tonight on the 40th anniversary of the Viking mission and the 47th anniversary of Apollo 11? And if you think NASA doesn't do things ritualistically, 47, of course, is part of 19.47, and 40 is one more than 39. It's canonically 40 in, you know, Old and New Testament. So the numbers, the numerology of NASA is well in operation because obviously it was not accidental that Viking was landed on the exactly the same anniversary date, July 20th, as Apollo 11. So who wants to begin?
I think we should let Bob begin since he didn't get to make it in on the last show and we missed him.
Okay, I agree.
Right, thank you. Right, if we're on the Radio with Pictures page and we scroll down to Bob's items, we should get to a few posters. So one of the things that Viking discovered, apart from perhaps life, was the face. So the first image here is just looking at the facial features of the face. And if we click on the image, it should enlarge. Click again, and we should get the full-sized image. So, you know, this just shows the... Depends whether you can see the face or not, but shows that it's two faces, really. An eastern side that's more leonine-like, and the western side that is more man-like or hominid-like.
Yeah, Bob, I should kind of break in here for people who have not followed the history and say that the Viking mission consisted of two landers and two orbiters, and each orbiter carried the lander to Mars orbit, and then the lander descended on its own retro rockets and landed softly on the surface. While the surface operations were going on, the orbital operations were taking reconnaissance pictures, and on the 25th of July, 5 days after the Viking lander had touched down on the anniversary of Apollo 11 in 76. 5 days later, on July 25th, the cameras sent back this image of this kind of fuzzy thing that looked like a face on the planet Mars. And it was so odd and so anomalous that the following morning at the daily briefing there at JPL, with all of us again gathered with our notepads, remember, no cameras, no digital, no pads, no smartphones, we're all just taking notes on something as archaic as paper. Anybody remember paper? Anyway, so Jerry Soffan, who was the project scientist of Viking, stood up and projected on the big screen in front of the JPL auditorium this fuzzy image of a face-like thing. And what he told us was, well, don't get all excited. It's just a trick of light and shadow. When we took a picture, we're going to be taking more pictures, but when we looked at this picture, it's obviously it's just a trick of light and shadow. Turns out that that's not exactly what took place. Over to Bob.
Right, just lost me for a moment. Do you want me to try carrying on that story?
Now that we've got things linked up and we can click on images, by all means, go ahead. So we're looking at figure one of yours.
Right, yes. Well, that's a context image from the new high-rise probe to Mars. Same year, it's been there about 8 years now, I think. And it's an oblique view of the face. The original Viking image was about 100 yards to a screen pixel, so it was very small. The ones below are from Mars Global Surveyor. So that's a reduced image. And then we come down to figure two, which is looking at two different images which we've cut in half vertically and then mirrored. So we've got on the right side sort of lion-like part of the face, and the left side is a sort of ape man kind of side of the face. So you should be able to see mouths, eyes, that kind of thing. So if we click out of that, go back to Radio of Pictures.
Okay. And do we want number three now?
Number two,
okay.
Right.
Got it.
Right, in the south east of the face, where I've coloured it up, the yellow areas are generally depressed areas. And then we've got this series of large-scale walls.
So hang on a second. For context, after Viking took the initial image, two decades later, almost 20 years later, the next mission, the unmanned missions, were sent back to Mars with much better cameras and took all kinds of imagery from a variety of angles, and we're now going through the subsequent imagery to the Viking imagery.
Yes. So figure one here is from Mars Global Surveyor, and this was taken around 2001, this one. The green, the tops of these green walls, quite prominent in the more northern part, is evidence of an underlying, large-scale underlying support structure here, which through sagging of the surface has revealed these possible walls. The red lines just show these rather smooth symmetry in some parts of the face, especially that left-hand western side where you've got the slope up to the platform, mm-hmm. as we call it. And if we come down below that annotated image, I've zoomed in onto this exposed large-scale wall, which is obviously very broken up. compared to that previous image.
So the close-up below the figure one with the yellow and the green is a close-up of the yellow and green area?
Of most of it, yes.
Okay.
The MGS, well, all images of the face taken with the high resolution are pretty fuzzy, very speckly, but you can see sort of cells in various places, circled in red, for instance, as four-sided cells, grid-like cells there. There's a circle on the right-hand image of a small tetrahedral outcrop. And figure two is Mark Colotto's attempt to see if there's any geometry in the face.
Yeah, we should take to tell people who Mark Colotto was, is.
Yes. Dr. Mark Colotto appears a lot in your book, The Monuments of Mars, and is an image analysis expert.
Tell you what, hold it there, Bob. Yeah. We're at the bottom of the hour. We got a couple minutes of commercials. Isn't it great this show has commercials? By the way, the other anniversary that I did not get around to mentioning, tonight is 1 year since this program went on the air, and we're now in 140 countries. You're on the other side of midnight. Stay tuned, and we'll be right back. And we are back. And by the way, I got to tell everybody, Carlos has outdone himself tonight. Listen to the bumpers. I mean, we have new bumpers. They're in cue. They're in tune. They're in the atmosphere. Anyway, thank you, Carlos. Now, David, who's calling in, we're going to take calls in a little while, but you've got to be able to update your Skype so I can connect you to the group call. Otherwise, if I connect you, I lose everybody else. And we can't do that. So, Robert, please continue.
Right, if we click on image three.
Okay.
This just shows, this is from the high rise, which is very high resolution, and shows some of the crumbling.
Now, this is under Bob's items in Radio with Pictures, under the other side of midnight. So for those folks, because we are having constantly people adding, like, you know, 10 to 20 to 25 a day are adding to Club 19.5, so a whole bunch of new people are joining, so we can't assume anything. So, theothersideofmidnight.com, click on Radio with Pictures, that takes you to tonight's guest page, scroll down to where it says Bob's Items, and click on number 3, which says Bob _ face. Go for it. Oh my God, look at that. Look at that. And then click on it again because it makes it bigger. Those are cell structures. There be geometry there. Now, this is a high-rise image, right, of the face?
That's right, yes.
Which is basically a pretty hefty Cassegrainian telescope in the spacecraft looking down. I think it's an 8-inch telescope looking down on Mars from 180 miles up. So you get some pretty damn good resolution. And you have now expanded zoomed in, magnified certain regions, and you can see. Well, what do we see?
Well, apparently, room-like structures that have collapsed. So the top one is the top of the western face platform, which is a flat area between the western upward slope and the actual facial features.
So the red numbers apply to the enlargements.
That's right, yes. Okay. And the...
Well, that looks like very large honeycomb, almost like you were looking at walls of rooms with the ceilings cut off. Kind of
exactly.
Like ancient Anasazi ruins all around me here in the Land of Enchantment tonight. 1,000-year-old Indian ruins that if you take an aerial picture... They look like that. Now, see, this is what I suspected when we got the Viking data, but it's taken 40 years to get the technology into Mars orbit to confirm our initial hypothesis that night when they made the announcement, you know, the next day, that the face on Mars in fact, was weird. Now we know it's weird because somebody made it, because you don't get those kind of cells in nature.
On the second image inside the mouth, where the cells continue.
Oh, there's more.
There was a time with the Viking pictures when they thought there might have been teeth inside the mouth.
Yeah, that was Carlotto's early work. And again, we were dealing with very low resolution. I mean, the Viking cameras were so primitive compared to these images. They were what are called little vidicons. Anybody remember what an image vidicon was or is? It literally is a TV camera about the size of a chapstick applicator, and it's so sensitive to vibration that if you hit it during taking the picture, like opening closing a mechanical shutter, you get weird lines in the image called harmonics. So we had to deal with all kinds of problems with the, you know, literally vacuum tube level technology that we sent to Mars for the first images. Now, of course, we're looking at solid state CCDs, incredible latitude, and stunning resolution. And Robert, if we had had these images 40 years ago, you and I and everybody else on the panel tonight might be doing this show from Mars.
Yes, perhaps.
Well, think of the incredible explosion of technology there would have been publicly, a la Kennedy, to basically go and find the technology that these guys left us. And every nation competing to be the first to go and get the technology that these guys left us. Anyway, keep going.
Yeah, so I was just wondering whether the cells actually created the illusion of those teeth, even though they're quite small. And there's a part of the, in the middle of each high-rise picture, there's a color strip, and the bottom image is just part of this platform that was picked up in color.
Ah, okay.
So we go back to Radio of Pictures.
Wait, I want to scroll down and look at the color picture. Hang on.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, how nice. Oh, isn't that special? But see, Andrew, you wanted to say something about left and right halves of the face.
Yeah. So, Bob, could you speak to the fact that the right side looks like it looks perfect? You know, it's got this long line coming down. I mean, it's on an angle, but there's a long line, and it curves in a beautiful backward J. And then the right side, which obviously with your earlier images, you can see the images coming through of what this structure probably was, but there looks like there's been something that's happened to the right side, to the northeastern side. Can you speak to that?
This is a sort of lion's ear shape.
Mm. Now remember, when I did the UN thing, which was, let me see, when did I do the UN? 1992? Yeah. I had enough imagery from the Mars Surveyor, which was the next mission after Viking with that 20-year gap, that we were able to put together a left-right composite. And I realized, you know, in the months before I did the UN presentation, that, oh my God, the face appears to be a fusion of two animalistic forms. Left-hand side appeared to be anthropoid, i.e. monkey, ape, etc., or hominid, as we term it. The right-hand side appeared to be a big, big, big pussycat, a lion, a leonid form. So you had this incredible symbolic fusion, Andrew, which to me, in the better imagery, I see stunningly, and other people don't see at all because it's that old Gigi problem. Have I been standing up too close or back too far? If you're looking at something that was a work of art, there's a kind of an optimum distance to look at a work of art, right?
Yes.
And if you get too close, you'll just see pixels. And if you get too far away, you'll just see a blur. So in terms of optimization of looking at art on Mars, finally now after 40 years and multiple spacecraft missions, we have enough data to say conclusively tonight, I would believe, based on the cell structure, which is together with the impression of an art, of a facial visage, this was a mile and a half, you know, 1,500-foot high mega work of art, which also just happened to be a building. Because all of these cells, all of these honeycomb structures are obviously walls and rooms and conference rooms and, you know, whatever people needed to live. So the face, the head, was literally, in our model, the headquarters, as this data now confirms.
So if we go on to image 4, which is taken from...
Okay, back to Radio with Pictures.
Yes.
Okay.
From the eastern side of the face. Now, the high-rise image, like the previous MGS high-resolution images, is very speckled, noisy, fuzzy, and the darker eastern side, more shadowy eastern side, this causes problems. There seems to be, it's very hard to bring out for people, but there do seem to be grids on that side.
I can see them.
You can see in this particular one, you can see
Bob, the whole damn thing is honeycombed. You know, which was part of our model. That why would you build a face as a work of art? Well, there are works of art on Earth, and Andrew, remind me which ones they are, where you have an artwork as a building, but it also is incredibly artistic. And for instance, what's the big opera center in Australia? I'm thinking of.
Oh, the Sydney.
Yeah, that looks like the huge double clamshells and all that.
Yeah.
So you got a building, but it's also a heck of a work of art. The face on Mars in our model was a structure inhabited, thriving, you know, almost a city, an arcology in the form of a humanoid / feline face. But it also was a mega work of art designed to be seen from the surface and from orbit, from air. In other words, it's the leftovers of an incredible civilization with incredible technological capabilities that's now in ruin in the sands of Mars, drifting over what used to be a thriving metropolis.
Answering Andrew's previous question, that northeast corner of the face, if we accept it as an artificial sculpture, it probably was supposed to be a lion's ear at one time.
I thought a putty tat. And I did.
So if we go back to...
Hang on. Right? Will, you're Sorry. Being incredibly silent. Come on, jump in here.
You know, I was just thinking about the movie Mission to Mars that came out, I think it was 2010, maybe a little bit longer ago, how inside when they finally, I don't know if you've seen it or not, but at the end, they actually get to the face on Mars and it actually opens up and allows them to come into the building and eventually take off in a spaceship towards where everybody was sent. I guess the race that left and had left this behind just for us to find had sent. And I was just thinking about that in my head. how we've got actually buildings in there. That's something that could have, if you're going to have a city center like this. And one thing that I haven't studied a lot.
That movie was done by Brian De Palma, who is the brother of Dr. Bruce De Palma, my physicist friend, who I worked with on hyperdimensional physics, who did stunning experiments and created technology, so-called free energy, I hate the term, that drew electricity out of the medium, out of the ether. And the film by Brian was an homage to his deceased brother, basically touting the physics, because if you go to the end of the Mission to Mars movie, remember how most of the guys are in the face and there's one guy prepping the launch vehicle and they have a launch window. They have to leave exactly on time, right?
And then
there's a close-up of his wristwatch there in the spacecraft waiting for the other guys to join him, and it clicks down 19.47.
Next time I watched, I have to check for that.
I remember that.
Now, what's even weirder is the original film, because, of course, Robin and I went to see it in the theater. In fact, this was a film that Time Magazine actually gave me credit for being the guy behind the scenes that De Palma used the book from to basically create the movie, but that's a whole other story. So Robin and I went, and we're seeing the original film, and I'm seeing that scene. And the watch that the guy has, and I forget who the actor is, he's a very well-known actor, young actor. He played in Sliders, among other things. Anyway, there's this close-up shot, and it's a digital watch. So it literally counts down 4, 5, 4, 6, 4, 7, that kind of thing. But in the remake, in the one you can now find on YouTube with clips and whatever, it's a watch with hands. so you don't see the 19 points per seven unless you know it's there. So someone went back and edited the trailer so it is not a digital display, which instantly shows the 19.5/19.47 that we're not supposed to know about.
That's so interesting.
Oh, what a tangled web we weave when first we practice to deceive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, let's go to what, number five, Bob?
Yeah, that's right.
Go for it.
So this is just a selection of different imagery of the face, concentrating on the
eye. Oh, now here we are. Okay, in the upper left-hand corner, remember how you said something about how they dismissed, they didn't even acknowledge they'd taken a picture, the second picture? Of all the gin joints in all the world, it turns out that one of the first duplicate images of a piece of real estate on Mars taken by the Viking orbiters was of the face on Mars. And they took a picture 35 days after the picture they took on July 25th, because that's where the orbits synchronized again. And the sun angle was different, so it was much higher. And the face was still there. Now, in science, there's a kind of a fundamental idea that if you get two pieces of data, or three pieces of data, or four pieces of data, and they're independent, but they all show the same thing, you're dealing with reality. NASA takes two separate pictures at two different sun angles, two different times of day, two different orbits, 35 days apart, and for 40 years, give or take, they've been lying to us about what they confirmed. Yet Cydonia, this region, as you can tell from just these pictures alone, turns out now to be the most highly photographed region on the planet Mars. Now, if there's nothing there, why has NASA, with mission after mission after mission, and the Europeans with their missions, and the Japanese, and the Indians, why have they all taken pictures of Cydonia? I think it's staring us in the face.
They're interested. So this is the top four images are various.
We have Viking
on the left, Mars Express from the European Space Agency
in
Mars
color.
Nukem's
camera was incredible.
Proper color as well, supposedly.
Mm-hmm.
Mars Global Surveyor from 2000, and the 2001 image, and all of them the Ape Man Eye is, and as a sculptural feature, is very credible as possibly being artificial. And then below it, we've got a larger image zooming in from Mars Reconnaissance Observer taken in 2007. And of course, once you get so close, you cannot see the wood for the trees. But
we're back to the Gigi problem.
Yes, but the underneath the eye there, you can just about make the almond shape of the eye out in the sort of pupil area. You can see it's very sort of gridded.
Mm.
And it definitely curves round as if it's shaping itself round that eye shape.
Now, are we talking about the left one or the right one?
We're talking about the left-hand side, okay. Yes. We're talking about the Ape Man eye. So if we go below that, we've got from the 2001 Mars Odyssey decorrelation stretch infrared imagery, which Keith Laney has done. And he's overlaid that on that high-rise imagery, I think it is. And we can see that the mineral composition of the eye being coloured red here is different from the rest of the face,
yep,
which suggests that there's something going on there.
Well, a compositional difference of some kind. Let's back up and think about geology here. If this is a geological feature, on a planet where there is no geology, I mean, there's no tectonics, there's no plate movement, there's no, you know, dynamics like here on Earth. It's basically a static shell. It just sits there and it's worn down and worn down and worn down by erosion. You got to ask yourself, well, what would cause a mesa, over a mile long and 1,500 feet high, incredibly symmetric, looking like a face, what would cause it to form, A, just naturally, just think about the natural process, and then B, what would segregate minerals or materials in this mesa so that the eye structure that we see in the visible imagery, when you do the infrared mineral analysis and overlay it like Keith has done here, you can see obviously that there's something different about that eye area from the other parts of the facial structure. And that kind of segregation of different materials naturally, there's no ready explanation for why in such a tiny, tiny area, and we're talking less than a mile, you'd have such a radically different composition change. In other words, all of the analysis over 40 years and all these missions and all the various instruments and all the various technologies brought to bear on Cydonia and made public. See, this is what's important. They made all this stuff public so we can be out here jumping up and down and saying, look at that, look at that. You know, they say nothing, but they provided us the data implying to me there's a political effort here to basically acknowledge our work, meaning the public's work, when they someday go and say, oh my God, look at that. You guys were right.
Hopefully.
Hopefully, yes.
So the very bottom image there, this is the context imagery from High Rise.
When you say context, the MRO, the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter, has two different cameras on it. One is the High Rise, which is the 8-inch telescope looking down. There's another camera called the Context Camera, made by Malin, good old, you know, Malin over there, and Mike Malin in Arizona. And this is that wider version, black and white, and it's also in perspective somewhat with a red outline.
Yes. So that dark eye shape there is not due to shadowing. It's due to a darker material.
For instance, a surface layer of material has eroded away, and we're seeing a different understructure, and it's uniform. Now, when you build things on Earth, you know, we build them out of concrete, steel, and glass and stuff like that, right? If you were to do an infrared analysis, a mineralogical analysis, and it's not really thermal. It's very shortwave infrared. It's just beyond the red, so it's more like color. Like color is indicative. Roses are red, violets are blue, that kind of thing. So the color is indicative, particularly if you look at it in terms of spectral shapes, of actual material identification. The erosion has somehow revealed the underlying structure of the face, and that structure, that material, is somehow different than the surroundings.
So I suspect if we're looking at an artificial face here, that this is deliberate, that they wanted the eye to be dark in a highly reflective monument.
Now, I don't mean to be kind of quarrelsome, but Rob, you keep saying if we're dealing with an artificial structure. Is there any doubt in your mind that this is artificial? I don't want to put you on the spot.
Nature can be freaky. Huh? Nature can be freaky, but there's a lot of evidence there that this is artificial.
But nature can be freaky, but that's a one of a freaky kind. When you have a whole planet filled with freaky artifacts, come on. You know, it doesn't live there by itself. It's in context, particularly with the stuff we're seeing from Curiosity. Is there any doubt in your mind, Bob, that this damn thing is artificial tonight? There is none in mine. And he won't answer. Okay.
No, well, I just don't take a point of view. I just put forward the evidence that keeps me sane.
Okay.
Are you a politician, Bob?
I must be, yes. So we go to back to radio of pictures, and we click on number 6, and this is something that Richard and the
maybe Theresa May has him in line for some kind of big government job, and he wants to kind of protect that possibility.
That's what I'm thinking.
So if we're... So we go to image 6 back on Radio with Pictures, and this is something that Richard and probably Mike and Enterprise Mission discovered, which is CMIS, the Mars Odyssey, 2001 Mars Odyssey, twilight picture at the top. which was before sunrise.
Ah, and the face, yes.
And these, so this...
And click on it again, inside, yeah.
So this inside of the face is lit up from twilight, not from sunlight. And it's very bright, much brighter than the Mises that are nearby. And so this suggested that there's a very reflective material used in our artificial face.
This picture was a Mars Odyssey picture taken by the Themis camera in, I think, 2003, which, of course, is decades after Viking. And all we got for years and years and years, Bob, was you know, left-hand illumination with the light, the sunlight coming from the left of the picture if you're looking down and north is at the top. This is the only picture I'm aware of, high res, taken by NASA when the lighting was from the other direction. This is pre-dawn, not pre-sunset. This is a pre-dawn picture, and the sun's not even up yet. When I did all the calculations, in fact, I even took Robin to the Grand Canyon to take pictures of the mesas in the middle of the Grand Canyon as dawn was rising to try to match the lighting. And it's obvious this damn thing down there, the face on Mars, given this lighting, is so incredibly reflective. It's almost like that right-hand side is made of glass. It's so bright, and the sun's not even up. This is just pre-dawn twilight on Mars, and pre-dawn twilight on Mars is a lot dimmer than twilight on Earth because the atmosphere is very, 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 very thin. So this, again, is another data point of anomaly. And when you put all the anomalies together, that's why Hoagland tonight on the 40th anniversary of Viking can say categorically the face on Mars and Cydonia is artificial. End of discussion from my point of view.
So if we scroll down...
And he still won't bite. Damn.
You can't get him again. You just went on.
I hope Teresa's offered you a hell of a good job, Bob.
If we scroll down, the MRO daytime imagery, the context imagery, mm-hmm. Reveals that the face can be very bright in the daytime as well.
Yes.
So this is
really great data. Oh, my.
Yes, there's a whole article on this on the Cydonia Quest website.
When did you write it? You didn't send it to me.
You made suggestions, Richard.
Oh, it's back. You never told me where it went. But yeah, oh my God, look at this. Tell people what you're doing because this is amazing.
Well, we go down to the very bottom image. Gamma. I've reduced the gamma here, which basically means that the least bright pixels have been turned off or dimmed. And
I tell you, hold it there because we're at the top of the hour. We've got 30 seconds here. Station break. My favorite NBC tones. My God, look at the face on that image. Wow. And look at the city. My guest this morning, Andrew Curry, Keith Laney, who's kind of with us in spirit because we can't connect with him for some reason, Bob Harrison, all the way from England, Will Farrer, and the 40th anniversary of Viking. 40 years ago tonight. Amazing. You're on the other side of midnight. We shall return. Back with my guest this morning, and we're looking at some photometric analysis that Robert and I talked about, what, like maybe a year ago?
I think it was in 2013.
Oh, my God. How time flies when you're having fun.
So the bottom image there is gamma reduced, and even eyeballing it, you can see that overall the face is the brightest thing in that image.
Oh, my God. This is real new data. Robert, congratulations. This is stunning new data.
And one of the things that we can do is look at the overall brightness of any of the mounds in that picture. And the face overall is by far the brightest. So
which again says it ain't a mesa. Or it's a mesa with something built on it, but I don't think that's real. I think they built the whole damn thing. The honeycombing, I think,
gives
it away.
I would think so, yeah. Yeah, I'd think so. It's not within the hypothesis of artificiality. that would have been completely built.
I can see the first mission lands. We've got live HD, ultra HD TV. The astronauts are saying, "Oh my God, look at that!" And Bob Harrison is saying, "I need a closer image."
I think if you landed on the face, you would need to dig. I think it'd be that problem of like in Egypt, you'd be walking over dunes and you wouldn't know they were there.
Although I think there's all kinds of very small stuff sticking out of the. I mean, look at what we're seeing now in Gale Crater. Rover, the Curiosity is roving by all kinds of junk, and it's the same environment, same planet, same atmosphere, same lack of humidity, same oxygen non-existence, etc. So I think, Bob, if we did land. And you wouldn't land on the face, you'd land next to it and walk over to it. I think we'd find all kinds of junk that would be instantly recognizable if you're looking at things on the scale of feet or, yards or whatever.
Well, that was certainly the case, as you say, in Gale Crater near to what was Mount Sharp and the Columbia Hills in, I'm trying to think of the name of the crater now, that a Spirit rover landed by. So if we go back to radio of pictures.
Got it.
A bit slow here. And number 7, this is, we were looking at the D&M pyramid late last year.
Okay, define the D&M for folks.
Just south of the face, there's a large five-sided pyramid, basically, which is very geometric when you join up the corners and the highest point and the ridge lines. It's not a regular pentagon shape, but it's bisymmetrical. You know, put a vertical line down the middle, and both sides tend to mirror each other. So we click on the image that's come up.
Yeah, and let me interrupt you a moment again. Of course, I always do. Because symmetry in nature is incredibly hard to create.
Snowflakes and crystals, basically. Yes.
Yeah, but that's at the level of things that are, you can look at under a microscope. We're talking something here again, almost 2 miles long, 1,500 feet high, a mile and a half wide. The symmetry strongly implies alone that somebody built this damn thing. And then as we scroll down and we look at your close-ups, holy cow. Oh, my God, Robert.
Now, these are on the scale of rooms.
Yes!
These grids.
There's no doubt. Quick, is Sidonia artificial or natural?
Artificial. We'll go for I'm happy to consider it as being artificial.
Thank you, Robert. Oh, my God. It's like I'm not a dentist. Okay, we got to cut away again. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. My guest, my panel, my imaging homage to the 40th anniversary of Viking when we return. My gosh, Carlos, you have outdone yourself tonight. This is amazing music. I don't want to say anything. I just want to play the music. So I'll be quiet for a moment here. And we are back. My gosh, Carlos, amazing bumper music tonight. My panel, once again. Okay, Andrew, you wanted to interrupt Bob because you had a very interesting comment and an observation.
Yeah, I know with under Radio with Pictures with Bob's number 7. Mm-hmm. Bob, I'm just going to stomp on you for your first. So please go to Bob's number 7 and click on that. And so this is... you were talking about the D&M pyramid, and he's bringing in like tighter versions of this sort of honeycombing that we see like within the pyramid, or what we think is a pyramid. And then what I'd like you to do is go back to Radio with Pictures. So I'm just going to kind of interject something in here, because I think it might round out. I mean, I'm brought on to put a little flesh on the old bones sometimes, I think. So what I've done is, if you scroll down to my images, which is, I think, way at the bottom, it says Andrew's Items. And if you go to the third one down, it's called Cataclysm. And it's an illustration I did. We had it here on the show months and months ago. But I thought, because this is an anniversary, hey, we all put up our photographs of our best.
Ah, yes. Oh, they're one of my favorites. And you did this, like, almost overnight. I mean, this was amazing.
Yeah, and this is kind of, Richard, if you want to get into the model, but this is sort of my idea of the D&M pyramid. And, I mean, you know what the concept here is that the planet was hit by something tremendous, like shrapnel on one side of the planet that just basically shifted two oceans, which NASA has now confirmed there's water on Mars, and the scientists are even talking about there might have been two oceans on Mars.
So,
yeah, and so this image, if we can just imagine ourselves down below the D&M pyramid out a ways, because that honeycombing not only is happening on the pyramid and on the face, but it's down on the ground.
Yes.
So, Richard, do you want to give us a little sing-song about this, about what we might be seeing here?
Well, in terms of your recreation, it's a surface view. It's looking northeast, I believe. Yep. And there's this huge tidal wave about to hit the D&M, which is, again, 1,500 feet high, mile or two long, mile wide, massive, house like a mountain built, as the Sumerians termed this. And it's about to get hit by the wave. It's going to survive, but it's going to get distorted. But all of the other structures, if you can imagine an endless city like L.A. for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of square miles around these structures, these massive ancient structures, when the wave hit, all those were swept away in an instant. And what you get, if you go back to Radio with Pictures, is basically honeycombing of the empty shells of the foundations of the basements, and you click on number four. Of Andrew, and
yeah,
that shows you the remains, not what used to be there, but what's left after something kind of just swept across the terrain next to the D&M. That's that D&M in the background and kind of distant, out of focus, and that's what's left, filled with sand. And if you land there, it would be, to me, instantly obvious that A, Andrew's right in his recreation, and B, there's no doubt this used to be a mega, mega complex. And unraveling the history, the various epochs of history, the building, the collapse, the rebuilding, the collapse, the rebuilding, stretching over millions of years, is going to change everything. I mean, we talk about the need for a game changer. As I'm watching Trump being nominated tonight, I'm thinking, we need a game changer. And this is it. This is the only one I can see big enough to wrest the human race from the track we're on to a track we need to get back on, which is to figure out what this is, our connection to it, and how we can make it work for the benefit of all mankind.
Exactly. Sorry, Bob, go ahead.
I was just going to say, it's interesting that new Martian research concluded that there have been two mega tsunamis on Mars in the past, which fits in with your picture very well.
Amazing, isn't it? It's called science, guys.
I think that we got some kudos finally from NASA about the water flows that we've been talking about. I've been yelling about it for 3 years since I've seen them come down on the pictures, and one of the first shows I did with Richard, I showed him the what do they call it, the RSL, the briny water thing coming down.
Yeah, and we Jill Ireland and what's his name, Palermo, and I call them streaks because they look like dark streaks. When you see them from orbit, they're big, but Curiosity, literally in Gale Crater, has photographed a few feet away little streaks, and they've been avoiding them up until when, Will?
Just recently, about, what was it? I think it was 2 weeks ago you sent
after
me the email.
After we did a show.
Yep, after we did a show.
We did a show, we made a big deal, and suddenly the NASA guys, oh, we're going to go and very carefully investigate the streaks. Because remember, they didn't want to back-contaminate and all these stupid excuses. I mean, they've landed a spacecraft on Mars. The organisms are free in the atmosphere anyway. So it's not going to do any more contamination, but we need to know, is that stuff water? And now NASA has said, from Curiosity, it's going to roll up and figure out a very clever way to sample upstream, so they don't do the downstream, so they don't do the contamination. These dark areas that appear to be moist, like wet sand.
Yeah, they're actually going to scoop them. I mean, I've got so many videos of me hollering and screaming and getting excited about it, that just to have something move forward with it. And they have, like I said, they had plenty of chances to do it. They were hovering around some of these areas for a while. We know they saw them.
Can you imagine what it's like to have watched for 40 years, gentlemen, 40 years, four decades, the evolution at a glacial pace, like molasses at the South Pole at 140 below, the movement of NASA to finally come to grips and acknowledge all of these anomalies and the integration of the anomalies that basically say life.
If we can call that acknowledge, it's about you guys tell us type thing, hands off. I think we're,
yeah, it's called plausible deniability.
But this is why Richard, your show is so powerful, because 140 countries as of this morning, today, this afternoon, right?
Let me go check. Well, it's like, you know, you can't tell the players without a scorecard. Every day I have to check and see what the numbers are, because more and more countries are joining. Looking right now down, got to get in the right screen here. Here we are. And it says that as of this moment, get out of the way, Google, come on, is 142 countries.
Oh, there you go.
God, I can't keep, you know. And so, we've got 43 cities from 10 countries are looking at us right now, listening to us right now.
And it's saturation. I mean, what's that old Vidal Sassoon commercial? You tell two friends and they tell two friends and so on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So back to Sidonia. Will, I think we – Bob, did you finish your summations, or is there any surprises you've left for the end?
Number eight. Not
there. Well, number eight is the Hoover Dam and how it was built.
Okay, hang on.
Which it was.
Scroll down to number eight. Bob's item's number eight.
You don't really need to blow it up. You can see it in the actual page, which is that the Hoover Dam is practically completely solid, but it was still built up in boxes.
Yeah.
To allow the concrete to set.
Oh, so structurally, it may be that the honeycombing we're seeing in, like, the DNM and the face is not so much rooms as it is partitions for structure, so the damn thing doesn't collapse.
That's right, to create a solid shell, yeah.
But you see, geometry is geometry is geometry. We'll find out when we land, but even now, based on this comparison, the only logical explanation is artificiality. And we even have analogs now here on Earth in terms of structural mechanical engineering that makes sense on the mega structures that are kind of small that we build compared to what's on Mars. I mean, it's astonishing, Robert. Excellent job.
And image 9 just shows how strong gridded shell structures can be.
Okay. So we're talking Fuller type domes?
Fuller's that's in Spain somewhere, perhaps Zaragoza, but Fuller domes tend to be very lightweight, whereas that structure you can see in the photograph is very solid.
It looks very massive, yeah.
Yeah, but it's able to span great distances because right-angled kind of grids are very
well. There's
have
a
great
reason why
strength.
There's a reason why egg cartons are made that way. It's because they're very strong. So anything done in multiple little boxes on the hillside, little boxes built, are going to be very, very strong for their weight, for their mass. And engineering should be the same on any planet other than this one, including this one, if the physics is the same and the engineers, the designers are kind of the same. And again, our model says that basically tonight I'm talking to a bunch of Martians that are very far from home.
Anyway, that's me done. So if we can go on to somebody else.
Okay. Will, you're up.
All right. Let's go back to the other side of midnight.com. And let's just refresh the page just in case we hit the radios with pictures.
Absolutely.
Got a lot of our friends Well, first off, with one of my things I wanted to talk about, and I'm just going to – there's a press release from the United Family of Anomaly Hunters that we just put out. I've talked about the UFAH here before, about how maybe 12 of – now it's 12 of groups that have, you know, various – some are moon anomalies people. Some are Mars anomaly people. We've all formed together, and we've actually started putting out press releases. We've got a couple guys that are really know what they're doing. Access to, as of right now, like thousands and thousands of people through all of our groups. So we're coming together. If anybody wants to read that later, it's linked under my Article A for Will's
items. I presume you're telling them they need to come here, be here on the other side of midnight or be square.
Yeah, I'm talking with M right now about maybe even doing a special where we bring them in. We're all used to using Skype too, so we do meetings every week usually on it. So it'd be nice to have a little pay a little homage to Mr. Hoagland and most of the guys and women. It's amazing how many people are actually interested in this stuff. It's not just, you know, here we use a lot of times we have a lot of guys hanging out and talking, looking at the pictures, but we've got plenty of women that doing this. I mean, it's amazing. I just, every time I say it's just amazing the amount of people that strive for this, are like wanting this information. And I think it's because it has been held back. You guys talked a little bit earlier about them hiding a face. And I had asked you during a break, and I was like, you know, Richard, I thought, did NASA use this to go out and get more funding? See, I'm 35 years old. Mm-hmm. That, you know, we're talking 40-year anniversary. So I'm not too sure. So you said no, and it really surprised me. So they wouldn't be plastering this thing everywhere.
Well, see, that's been the political answer to our position for decades. You know, they've said things like, but Hoagland, if this was real, this would be a gold card for NASA. They would go to Congress, they'd get unlimited money, and we'd never have more problems, and that kind of thing. And it's a very, very simplistic and wrong analysis, because it completely ignores the religious implications, the energy implications, the political implications, the power structure on the planet implications, and the idea that if you've been lying to humanity for millions of years about who they really are, you're not going to turn around the next day and tell them, my God, you guys were gods at one time. Go back to Genesis, the fall, et cetera, et cetera. So it's coming slowly and painfully, and it almost looks to me, Will, as if their strategy is to let us find stuff, and then at one moment, at one dawn, they'll say, oh my gosh, look at that, and they'll make it appear as if it's a logical, natural, organic response to the taxpayer situation, when in fact it's a strategy to get them off the hook so they're not responsible, we are.
For the years and years of denial.
They just claim ignorance. How can you prove someone's not dumb and stupid? You can't.
I asked some of the guys in the forum over at whatsupinthesky.com, our website, to come up with some of the Viking images. And the first two under I've got 1A and 1B were just two of the ones that they sent over. And I think this is Richard, I'm not as familiar with the terminology. The first one I've got here looks like it's on Keith's as well.
Okay, let me click on it. This is 1A Viking.
Yes, it's okay. Been rotated and cropped.
Yeah, this is the second image of Cydonia that was taken by the Viking spacecraft 40 years ago tonight, plus 35 days, okay? Well, maybe 40 days, because it's the 25 days to the 20th. So this is the side view of the D&M below the face. The face is not on the image. This is crop. This is close up in. And this image zeroes in on the D&M pyramid as seen from the west.
It's tremendous what you can see just from this. Now, is this the image that they hid from us?
No. This is the one that they didn't hide, but they claimed they had taken 35 days later. We don't think the geometry works because it would have been night. So they took this at another time, and they just lied about the date. But it is a second Viking image with the little image orthicon. Remember, little TV cameras, little tiny, you know, pencil-sized TV cameras in the Viking spacecraft looking down from 200 miles. And that's what we see of the D&M. You can just barely see the geometry that now, of course, we know is stunningly artificial when you get down and dirty and close.
Yeah, it's truly amazing. The actual resolution of those
blow my mind even to think that this was 40 years ago.
This is about, I think this is 50 meters per pixel resolution, meaning 50 meters, 3 times 50 is 150 feet per pixel. Now we're seeing images from MRO. Robert, correct me if I'm wrong, of maybe 5 inches per pixel?
I think the highest is that they publish is 10 inches per pixel.
Oh, my God. I was wow. By two, factor of two, 10 inches. That's less than a foot. 150 feet compared to a foot, okay? That's the scale of advance in 40 years of looking at this data. And I don't think it's accidental, gentlemen. I think it's part of a planned disclosure curve because basically the human race back 40 years ago was not ready. Now we've had all kinds, a la Brookings, of public education under the guise of entertainment. I won't even get into Star Trek, et cetera, et cetera. And now when this comes out, people will go, oh, okay, where's Kim Kardashian's picture again?
Forget that. Yeah, now, I've always wondered about the disclosure, if we're basically disclosing that there was life on Mars.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait, hang on. News break. Laney is typing. He says his internet has been out all night, so I'm supposed to try to call him back. Okay, so you keep talking while I do this. And maybe we'll have to retract all the terrible things we said about him. Oh, there is a light of green. Ah, okay. I should have one of those you know, game show things. Dun, 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 dun,
are
dun, dun. Keith, are you with us?
Yeah, good morning.
He's here.
Yes.
Good morning.
I've been having a Bob moment. I woke up, didn't have any internet, didn't have any cable, didn't have anything. They must have been doing maintenance on my line.
A likely story.
Yeah, I'm serious. I've been sitting here for about 20 minutes going, I went back to bed, but I woke back up and said, maybe it's on, and it's on, hey.
Super. All okay, right. Will, I don't, you know, Keith, we'll get to you in 5 minutes, all right?
Yeah, well, and I'll keep it fast here because we'll maybe try, you want to take some calls, and, you know,
no, we won't take
here.
It. There's nobody, they want to hear what we have to say because we only spent 40 years doing this, all right?
Only 40?
Only 40, yes.
The second one down that we've got was just an area that was from the next image, the 14. It was just you look at it. It's cool. I'd say.
Well, this is of the area south of the city and the face. If you actually go back to Radio with Pictures, let me do that. All right, and then we'll come back to this one. All right, click on. That's it. Oh, I went too far. My computer's slow tonight. Anybody else's computer slow tonight?
I've had some friends say the feed was running a little slow. I think that just means more and more people listening.
I guess. Okay, so scroll up to the very top on Radio with Pictures under My Items and click on my one graphic. See a Sidonia geometric relationship model? Okay, if you look on the left-hand side, see where it says D&M?
Mm-hmm.
The close-up you're showing is just at the bottom corner, just below that corner, the left-hand corner. Of that image, all right? It's close-ups of the stuff down there. Now, this, while we're on it, by the way, this is all the geometry that Errol Torin and I found many, many years ago, which proved to me unequivocally that Sidonia was artificial. It was Arthur Eddington, a very famous British astronomer in the 19th century, said, "Gentlemen, you do not have a science until you can express it in numbers." So when Errol and I found the numbers of Sidonia, that did it for me. And everything else has been catch-up to the point where Bob tonight actually says, it's probably artificial.
Only the face. it almost, just from the other picture, it looks so city-like. I mean, it's just amazing that from the resolution that we have, of course, now, like with the high rise and everything.
Oh, now, yeah, but see, back, look, the people said to me, Holden, why do you keep going out on the limb? Why do you keep saying things you can't prove? Because that's the fun of it. Who wants to be second or third or fifth? If you can get the data and assemble a model and then you predict, remember, science is about prediction. Our model said we should find all the amazingly cool stuff we've been talking about for the last 90 minutes if the model was correct. Well, you find all the cool stuff. The model has to be correct, damn it. The place has to be artificial. Let's move on and find out why they're not telling us why it's artificial. But we can't move on until we get past the bottom of the hour. Another couple of minute break. My guest this morning, Keith Laney, has finally joined us and the rest of the panel, and we shall return. And we are back on the other side of midnight. Carlos, don't turn that music down. Turn it up. You have really hit it out of the park tonight, out of the solar system. That's amazing. Okay, fade it down. When we are back, Will, pick up, please.
All right, so go back to Radio with Pictures under Will, item number, well, it's WF-1 Viking 2 Alien Tank Debunked. I want you to click on that.
We're
going to
have to kind of work with you on titles.
It's our titling thing. We have so many people to keep them together. We have this tank.
Let's tell everybody what this is. This is a color Viking image from, I think it's Viking 2, which landed a couple of months after Viking 1, or maybe a month. I spent so much time at JPL, I lost track of the day. Literally, I lost track of days. So they land this spacecraft. They get these beautiful color panoramas. Again, this is the slit scan camera, amazing technology for 1976. And there's this cylindrical, obviously mechanical thing lying on the surface in front of the spacecraft. And, of course, we all, those who have followed the mission and the engineers and all that, we knew instantly what it was. Now we fast forward the film. It's 40 years later. There's a whole bunch of people all over the web looking at these pictures, some of them for the first time, and they go, holy crap, what is that? So tell us what that is.
That is the surface sample assembly, which they, if you see next to the actual piece, there is a divot where they actually scooped up some soil and did the samples. I think what actually had to happen was that had to kind of jettison off of it so it could be used. The actual scoop was inside of it.
Exactly. They had to unlimber the what they call the head, and that this was a little explosive squibs, they call them. And they detonate them by radio control from the computer on the spacecraft, and that pops off, and then it releases the sample arm to go and dig the trenches that you see just to the left of it. But because the folks that are now looking at this data have no historical connection to the mission, they're obviously, their imaginations have galloped away with them, and so this is your public service to tell your friends and colleagues, slow down, folks, this is what artificial stuff looks like on Mars. Except we brought it.
Yeah, I would be more interested in the big box-like thing right under the word Mars, you know, when I was looking at it. But a lot of people, like I said, there's so many YouTube channels out there and so many disinformation outlets that'll just put anything they get out and use any explanation. If there's dirt on it, it looks like it's been there for years. Keith and I have taken the liberty along with you on the show. We've done a lot of these fakes, fakes and how to do it. I've been going through and making these pictures for people. I mean, just to let them know this is not, and to give them the truth, you know, because it's sometimes you got to show the truth by showing pointing it out this bluntly. So hopefully this won't be anybody listening today, and I'm going to post this one tonight on the website. Hopefully now you know that's not an alien tank or scuba tank from Mars.
Because I saw the photo when it was first popped off, and by the way, there were photos before and after. Mm-hmm. So we know that it came from Viking because it wasn't there in the pan that was taken before this one. Okay, Keith, your internet is giving you problems all night. Thank God you finally made it to the 40th anniversary show. Where do you want to show us?
Oh, well, that's a good question. Let's see. I wasn't able to hear the first part of the show. Did you go over the Why Mars picture at the top?
The Why Mars? No.
Yes.
No.
Okay. Well, if you go back to off your back.
We were thinking of creating a temple and calling it Keith's Artifacts. Go ahead.
we were trying to shock you remotely from here.
I was shocked. All right. I was like, why of all times, why now?
But okay. So we click on number one, Laney, Boeing. Okay. Tell the story of this. This is amazing.
Okay, now I would never have seen this picture if not for Richard. He's had it on his website for years, and when I did, it absolutely blew my mind.
Well, you know who found this?
No.
Mike Barra, my co-author on Dark Mission, Mike Barra, found this in a drawer at Boeing in Seattle, because Boeing had a big contract to do Mars studies, and they had commissioned an artist to basically do this print in honor of George Bush's, the original President Bush, his Mars initiative, Moon Mars initiative. But when you look at the picture, you've got two astronauts struggling up a hill toward a bunch of rocks that, when you look at them a little closer, they're not rocks.
No, they're ruins. They're, you can see right in front of the astronauts, there's one that has a face on it.
Yes!
Yes, it's beaten all up, and it's kind of like what we'd expect to see. It is kind of like what we've seen on Mars. It's beaten all up. It's definitely a statue. It's definitely stacked masonry. You can see this. And why this artist would choose to represent this as an homage to President Bush's Mars program is, it doesn't go beyond me, but I'm sure it goes beyond a lot of the community that would have commissioned it.
So lay out what we think is going on here.
Well, we see some astronauts climbing up and discovering ruins, and that's the reason why it's why Mars. We're going to find our origins. We're going to find this was back before. This was commissioned back before we.
This
really
was
had
19.
Any,
this was 1989.
Yeah, we had was Viking stuff, and they're showing pictures of ruins on the surface of Mars, and the only thing we had at that time was Viking images. So
the data source had to have been Viking.
Right.
Oh, how special.
Well, if you click back off of that, that's something too. I wanted to, got an error going back.
Hey, Keith.
Mm-hmm.
This commission would be under strict adherence to the client. This would not be just an artist going off on their own. This is very, very strict and very outlined. Absolutely, for sure.
Oh, no, this was not any freelancer. He was under commission, and he did this specifically, and he put all the juicy stuff, and that's why Mike found it in a drawer in a desk buried in the Boeing plant in Seattle. It never made it to any major expositions. It was actually, when they saw what the artist had done, the whole bunch of other NASA people freaked out. Gosh, I wonder why.
Okay, now on the website, for some reason, I've just got an error establishing a database connection on the site. So
yeah, I'm trying to connect myself. I'm getting a website error. Do we understand why? Okay, maybe somebody cut our feed because we're getting into too dangerous territory.
That's possible.
So we may have to do real radio. Keith, look, when did you join this merry band? When did you start looking at anomalies on Mars and not taking the NASA party line?
Well, I always took the NASA party line, and up until you kind of caused me to look closer.
Well,
by your
me?
Own study, yes, you.
Okay.
Believe it or not, if you check in your files, you'll probably find a letter from me from years ago, going, "Wow, I'm gonna start looking at this in earnest due to you." And it's been about Viking time. When Viking landed, I was like 12, 13. Something like a really impressionable young age. And these pictures that we were seeing coming back they kind of floored me. And, this was back before, the internet we had was, the baud dial-up, so, and Windows 3.1, so forth. This is what we were using to look at these things. It wasn't like it is now. We just basically got the press release images, and those were enough to wow, and those were enough to inspire, those were enough to, really get me going on the search for these artifacts, because looking at the pictures, even before I thought there was something there, it was just something about it that just struck me as, hey, this is strange, something's up with this. And then that wonderful face, which is my second image, is the second image that I have on there is the two Cydonia images from Viking.
Yeah, the problem is I can't get to the website. We're having some kind of technical issues with the website.
But you know what, Richard? This is perfect, because this is a time to come in and say it's time, everybody, to join Club 19.5, because you can come back tomorrow when the site is back up and go through the images.
Exactly.
This is the type of thing that happens when you're doing live radio. Especially, it's amazing at work sometimes we can't get 10, 20, 30 people on without having this happen.
Okay, we got our crack technical staff on this, I'm told, so we may get it back before the end of the show, or we may not. So, all right, gentlemen, I think we've established that there's an ancient civilization on Mars in Cydonia, that Viking took those first two pictures of the face and have been all the brickbats and all the skeptics and all the diatribes against those of us who said, wait a minute, pay attention. It's turned out now to be true. The honeycombing, the multispectral, we looked at some of your shortwave infrared mineral analysis of the composition of the face earlier when you were not with us. So the consensus is we're looking at a civilization. Let's take the last 20 minutes, because we may not have images. Let's take the last 20 minutes to tell everybody what we think this means. Because without meaning, what's the point? Don't everybody speak at once.
That's right. Hey, I've just got a website back.
Oh, let me go check. Okay.
Yep, there it is. Okay. All back.
Good.
Well, good. Then go back to keep on going with my crazy little pictures.
Absolutely.
Okay, the second image of mine on radio with pictures are the two Cydonia images, 35A 72 and 70A 13. And these are, you know, gosh, the controversy over these
images. Okay, hang on. Those were the numbers of the two original images that Viking took of the face in 1976. The first one was on July 25th. And the second one was on 35 days later. So the left-hand image is 35A72. That's the original Viking image. The second one on the right-hand side is 70A13, I think. And then the bottom is a perspective shot that Mark Carlotto did in the first shape from shading experimentations with a kind of a color tone, hue, to represent what you'd see if you could see this from low altitude in an aircraft or a drone or something. And so, please continue.
Yes, and you want to know what actually got me looking in earnest? And it was a certain fellow with immaculate hair on CNN holding up a picture of this bottom North Carolina picture. That's what got me involved.
Oh, I should tell you the backstory on that. CNN was so furious at me for doing that. Remember how I held up the face?
Yes, you did.
Totally freaked out. The control room, the other panelists, the moderator. I mean, it was like I was boldly going where someone should never go, and I was doing it on live CNN television. They never invited me back after. Ever.
Say, but you lost your job.
You know what, though? That's okay, because he reached an incredible amount of people like that, me being one.
CNN was the news organization.
Oh, it was the cat's meow, as we used to say back then. Okay, we're moving quickly. We only got about 50 minutes.
Moving quickly, if you go down to the next picture down, which is my third item, it says 3 Laney Viking Snow. This is another one of the pictures that really blew me away, because I'm thinking, you know, Mars, dry, cold, lifeless, and then they send us a picture that has snow on the ground. Oh, there's not a drop of water there. Remember this? Back in the day, it was sworn up and down, there's no water, never has, not a drop, not a...
Well, wait. We were told when this picture, this, by the way, is a color picture a little to the left of the earlier color one from Viking 2, the one with the canister. This is to the left of that picture. It's in a different season. We were told that this is winter on Mars, and the white stuff is not water, snow. It's supposed to be CO2, supposed to be carbon dioxide.
Well, that's a funny thing about that, because there were strong hitters on both sides of the debate. No, it's water ice. No, it's carbon dioxide ice. And do you know, to this day, they still have not settled that out. But you have, if you go to NASA on certain of the places where this picture is displayed, they say it's water ice, and on others, they say it's carbon monoxide. I mean carbon dioxide. They still don't know. But I'm telling you, that's water. That's snow. That's frost. Hasn't a thing to do with carbon dioxide. It has to do with water.
Okay. Well, if we had time, I could get into why I think you might be right, but we don't have time. So moving on, quickly.
Yeah, moving on, and we go back. Now, if you go to my item number 4 and click on that.
Got it.
Okay, this is right a little ways to the left of where the canister was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this is one of the first anomalies that I ever noticed. And this was This was sent to me almost a decade and a half ago by a friend of mine named Tim Beach, because he was doing a yeoman's job back then of going through and really, really looking through the Viking catalogs and searching for little surface anomalies. And this is back before it was cool. You know, you think people think you're crazy now for looking for rocks on Mars and sand.
The picture's not loading for me, I hope. Everybody else having a problem?
I've got it to myself.
I've got it up, but I...
Yeah, don't click off of it if you've got it up yet. But anyway, Viking took us...
Ah, here it is. Okay, it just took a long time. We must have a lot of people on the site tonight.
Yeah, it was a little bit slow for me, and I've got a 500 meg line.
Okay, so this is close-ups now of the trench.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, it's close-up of the, I think it's the second one over. If you're looking at that picture, and there's a couple of them on, it might have been one that we've looked at already. But it's, in other words, it's to the left of where the canister is. But I know, but Tim Beach noticed something strange in this. He sent it to me and said, "Hey, Keith, you need to have a look at this." And I didn't see anything irregular at first until he pointed it out. If you scroll down a little bit, Viking 1 took a soil sample. It's hotly contested, but it tested positive for life. A lot of people, you know about this. Gil Levin put a test on Viking that was supposed to test for life. Well, it came back positive, and it's been contested ever since.
Now, we're talking microbial life in the soil.
Yes, microbial life in the soil. But I'm saying it could be other life, too. And this, there's evidence of it sort of in this picture. If you look to the left and the right of this trench, there's an oval-shaped rock right to the left, just right off the trench.
See it?
Laying on its side. Oval shape. It's got a hole in the end of it. And out of the end of that hole, if you go down to my second image that's on that panel, it's brought in a little bit closer. You can see it appears to be leaking something down into the trench.
Oh, my. You're right.
And now if you look over to the item that's on the left, it looks like a broken stalk.
The one, it's got geometry. It almost looks like it could be... What are some of the stalks of vegetables that have like six-sided geometry? I've seen them.
There's a bunch of them.
Like cauliflower, whatever. By the way, someone has been very persistent and very patient. I'm going to add them to the call. Good morning. You're on the other side of midnight. Tell us who you are and where you're calling from.
This is Robin from Minnesota.
Good morning, Robin.
Hey, I'm looking at this image. I'm beginning to think that all those craters there might be bomb damage near the face. If you look at that, the bright image of it, from the daylight context camera, it's at an angle where you can actually see a crater in the lower right-hand side of the face, and then right below that, in front of the face, is another crater, a clearly visible one that landed out in the dirt in front of it, that's about exactly the same size. And also...
Okay, hang on. Robin, if you go up to Laney's number 2, and you look
Bob's
at the...
Bob's picture, yeah, and look at the bright image there, here, let me go, I got to go back here to the... I had moved it. I didn't think I was going to get through, so I went to a different image here. But it's the one, the Bob's images, the one that has the context camera image. I think it's the second image on it. It's image number 6.
Under Bob's?
Yeah.
Okay.
You can see. Whoops. I don't know. I'm getting all kinds of strange effects on Firefox recently.
Okay, which of Bob's images? Which number?
It's 6, and it's the
it's the one that's
from the context. Now, if you look at the face, you can clearly see a crater in the lower right hand there, right on the face itself. And then it's exactly the same size as that other crater that's very, very close to the face.
Okay.
And if you look at the whole image of that area, there are, strangely enough, there's only 3 different sizes of craters. There's a big, a middle size, and then
Robin, Robin, you are very, very perceptive. One of the earliest conversations I had with John Brandenburg, who is the nuclear physicist who has written a couple of books now about ancient civilizations on Mars and a nuclear war and all that, Before I invited him to the Independent Mars Investigation Team, which was at SRI back in 83, we had the conversation about these craters, the very things you're pointing out, and I asked him as a nuclear weapons specialist, I said, John, I said, how can we tell the difference between impact craters and nuclear bomb craters? And he said, he said the depth to width ratio. And when we measure the depth to width ratio, these craters turn out to be nuclear bomb type craters more than impact craters.
Do you see that, the circle on the face there in that image?
Yep. That damage, gentlemen, that damage, everybody
I've
else
never
in the
seen
panel.
It on any other images of the face, but this particular camera, you know, the sun angle and everything
it's
the, is
it's
right.
The, it's the sun angle, it's a timing, you know.
It's
that,
not
that,
a deep, you know, it's, it landed right in, you know, where there was, you know, structure underneath of it, so the crater isn't that clear. Because, you know, it's exposing things underneath. But that crater that's right to the left side and below, I mean, it looks like they targeted it with two weapons of the same kind or even more.
Very perceptive.
And one of them hit it. And, you know, and I think that they had, you know, and I think that they still have, that part of their planetary defense system might still be active because that sandstorm, when our very first probe gets there that we've ever sent, the entire planet is obscured, you know, for what, almost a week, and then we've never seen that before or since.
Well, no. Hang on. Dust storms occur roughly every opposition to Mars, which is roughly every.
But they don't cover the whole planet.
Oh yes, they do. Oh yes, they do. Yeah. And Robin, we only have a few minutes left, so let's move along.
That eases my mind a little bit. But there's another horrible possibility that Phobos might be the weapon platform that, you know, that launched all these things.
Speculation. Okay, anything else?
No. There's some recent science fiction that deals with structures, orbital structures like that, that are sort of a gift from a machine civilization that,
well,
you know,
that gets us into who did all this and when did they do it and why did they die and all that. So if you have no other questions, I'm going
to
move on.
Okay, well, I just wanted to point that out to you guys and because I'd never seen that, you know, an image that actually showed up, you know, a crater.
I think that
right
really reveals that could be a crater. It could be an explosion. I think
I don't know, but a lot of these structures, you know, along the shoreline of the old ocean there, the pyramids, a lot of them seem to have more crater damage on them than probability would indicate from, you know, from meteors.
Which is exactly the conversation I had with Brandon Berg in 1983. Okay.
Well, anyway, thanks for talking to me.
Thanks you. Okay, guys, we got 5 minutes left. Let's go back to Keith. All right. And where are we going?
Okay, now, if you can go to my image number 5, go to Keith's section on radio with pictures, and it's my image number 5. Mm-hmm. And in this, I've taken the south gate of the D&M, which looks like a totally bombed-out city, and then I compared it to an actually totally bombed-out city, which is Nagasaki. And the main thing that brought to my mind similarities is you see the stadium that's in the middle of the Nagasaki image that's just kind of gone.
Yep.
Well, look at the round thing that's right, the oval things that are right in front of the D&M.
Oh, my God.
Really similar. And then you also have the laid out block, the ruined laid out block structure. You have the same thing on both images. Yeah, this is Nagasaki. This is where we dropped an atomic bomb on Japan, and that's ground zero that we're looking at.
And again, even though in Nagasaki it was the instant flash and the thermal and the blast, atmospheric blast, that destroyed everything above ground almost and left the foundations, the geometric foundations, on Mars next to the D&M, it could have been another process that illuminated the structures and left the foundations, but the foundations of the foundations are the foundations. Isaac,
right.
Are you
it's
listening?
Different. We think it was a flood or something that went through the – and it was a nuclear blast that went through Nagasaki.
But the geometry is what's giving away that you could be looking at artificiality, obviously, in both places. And we know Nagasaki is artificial. So things that are equal to each other can be equal to – anyway. We got about 3 minutes. Gentlemen, not enough time. I want kind of a summary of where you think we are tonight from each of you. 30 seconds. Andrew Start, you're A.
Okay. Whoa. All right. Well, Richard, I wanted to add just with Robin's comments that didn't Brandenburg talk about a lot of radioactive isotopes?
Yes, yes. We now have radioactive data that supports the idea of a nuclear war. But remember, hyperdimensional torsion weapons also leave weird radioactive signatures, and they're even more destructive. So.
Yeah. I mean, again, my point here is that we've got such an archive of information now. I mean, we are building, like what you talk about, libraries. Well, we're doing it ourselves with the imagery that's coming and all the data points that are lining up. And I think it's just, like you say, a matter of time or timing before this thing finally crashes through.
Okay. Bob?
Just congratulating you on having a anniversary of your show, Richard. The time is obviously right.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm hoping, well, with help from friends like me, I can almost retire. Will.
Along with Bob, I'll say congratulations. You got your year under your belt. And also, I say that this mission seemed to have, if these would have failed, who knows if we would have gone back and gotten all these amazing images from everything from, if you look at what I sent in, from clouds on Mars to the snow on Keith's pictures, it's opened up, I think, a world that I know many people are enjoying. So thank you for allowing us to have the platform to come in here and share a little bit with the world.
Hear, hear.
Thanks. Keith? Unmuting helps.
Okay. well, you know, all I can say is what a long, strange trip it's been. I mean, from, you know, for 40 years now, since Viking opened our eyes to Mars being an actual world, actual possibility for a civilization, life, or a former civilization, perhaps our home. You know, it's been a long, strange trip, and it's gotten better. It's gone from the point where, you know, if anyone remembers the Viking days, they know it was not easy to see this stuff.
Well, gentlemen, unfortunately, we're at the end of the show. Thank everyone. Keith Laney, Robert Harrison, Andrew Curry, Will Farrer. Tomorrow morning, open hailing frequencies, and we have surprises that actually will connect to some of the things we talked about tonight. So until tomorrow morning, same bat time, same bat channel. Remember, third star on the left. Straight on till morning. Good night, everyone, and happy anniversary.